Salt rising bread is an Appalachian traditional bread made without yeast. It's a baking custom that can be traced back to the 1800s, but not much has been documented about the bread or its history. So two women in Mount Morris, Pennsylvania, began a quest to understand the hows and whys behind a tradition that seems to captivate anyone who catches wind of it. Bakers Jenny Bardwell and Susan Brown have been researching the bread for 20 years.
We often describe salt rising bread as dense white bread with a fine crumb and a unique cheese-like flavor. Indeed, it is, when at its best, as if a delicately reared, unsweetened plain cake had had an affair with a Pont-l'Evêque cheese.
Susan Brown quotes James Furness, who describes salt rising bread in his book, The Americans.
So in other words, fancy combination of a fancy French cheese and a plain sweet cake, and you get that sweet cheese-like savory flavor of salt rising bread.
Brown grew up in Greenbrier County, where every Saturday she would have salt rising toast and eggs for breakfast with her grandmother. She's passionate about passing down the tradition. Brown's friend, Jenny Bardwell, was introduced to the custom through a neighbor, the recently deceased Pearl Haynes of Mount Morris, who made the bread for 90 years.
I'd go visit her, and they were making this bread that I'd never heard of, and it was a very unique bread. There's no yeast in it. So I immediately latched on to, this is special. I'd never learned about anything like that in cooking school.
Bardwell is the owner of Rising Creek Bakery in Mount Morris. She and Brown opened the bakery about 5 years ago, and now it's one of the only places in the country that produces the product. Hundreds of loaves are shipped out each week. Through surveying their customers, Bardwell and Brown have discovered that by far, the favorite way to eat the bread is toasted with butter. Others like it dipped in sweet coffee or toasted with milk and brown sugar on top. The history of salt rising bread is something of a mystery. Passed down as an oral tradition, there are few records that hint at its origin. Brown and Bardwell have done some serious research, though. They've even traveled to bakeries abroad looking for connections. While it's difficult to draw any definite conclusions, their best guess is that the tradition was born of necessity in remote and isolated Appalachian regions in the late 1700s. Bardwell says the bread is a testament to the spirit of the female pioneer.
What we're finding out really is the ingenuity of pioneer women and how they persevered with their cooking. They were isolated. Appalachian women were isolated. They weren't able to get commercial yeast. It wasn't even produced till the 1860s, but they wanted a loaf of bread. So they kind of, anyway, they persevered with this very difficult bread to make.
We also believe that it's possible that these pioneer women would leave flour and water mixed together, like from maybe a gravy or a cream sauce that they were putting on something, and realized that if it was set overnight, it would bubble in the morning and their bread would rise from that.
Even the name, salt rising bread, is a little mysterious. Brown says it's really a misnomer because recipes call for very little salt. She says one possible explanation might have something to do with a wagon wheel.
We do have documentation of the pioneer women who crossed the country on the pioneer trails keeping their starters warm in the salt barrel, which was kept on top of the wagon wheel. And as they traveled across the country during the day, the sun would warm the salt, which would in turn warm the starter.
Wow.
And then they could make their bread in the evening when they stopped traveling.
Bardwell explains that heat is a critical ingredient in dough making.
It's a very difficult bread to make. Primarily the main difference between salt rising bread and sourdough, which is wild yeast, salt rising bread is primarily wild bacteria that you're culturing with heat. Sourdough happens at room temperature. Salt rising bread happens from about 105 to 115 degrees Fahrenheit.
Bardwell says there are three phases of salt rising bread. You got to make a starter dough, then grow it, then bake it. Simple, right? You make your starter with potatoes and water and heat, or milk and cornmeal and heat. I know, very different, right? And yet, they create the same product. Riddle me that. Then you wait and watch.
And it's variable since you're capturing wild bacteria. Sometimes it's 9 hours, sometimes it's 11 hours. And you have to be really tuned into this bread. You have to kind of know how to recognize it when it's ready, not before, not an hour later. You have to kind of know. Then you make it into a sponge stage, so you're kind of increasing this batch of microbes.
Bardwell says, depending on which recipe you use, the starters look very different.
One's with milk, one's with potatoes and water. They look very different, and they smell differently. That is another big characteristic of salt rising bread, is it smells strong. I kind of like the smell. Some people can't stand it.
Bardwell says she met one centenarian from North Central West Virginia who remembers that smell from her childhood. The old woman said she knew to avoid the neighbors when she could smell the dough because the missus only made it when she was really angry with her husband, who hated the smell. So what makes it stink is what makes it rise. This is where the baker meets the candlestick maker. Brown and Bardwell put their science caps on and headed to a lab in Pittsburgh.
In just our own quest to find out what is this microbe that's rising the bread that lends this wonderful flavor, we had it isolated, and we took like a dozen starters up to this scientist in University of Pittsburgh. He was very nice to entertain us with this whole quest. And we walk in and it smells just like salt rising bread.
So this guy, Bruce McLean, has made a name for himself as a pathologist. And he studies Clostridium perfringens, one of the wild microbes responsible for the rising in the salt rising bread. The women explain that they came to learn that these microbes can be pathogenic. They can cause, get ready for it, gangrene in human beings, or enteritis. That's diarrhea. Yeah.
Nobody's gotten sick from eating salt rising bread. As a matter of fact, we've written an article with a physician at WVU, Dr. Greg Juckett, who loves salt rising bread. And there is absolutely no history of anyone ever getting sick eating salt rising bread.
Bardwell, Brown, and McLean helped write an article with Dr. Greg Juckett for the West Virginia Medical Journal to highlight how salt rising bread has absolutely no history of causing any disease or discomfort.
Bacteria exchange DNA all the time. They're always, their DNA is moving around. And for some reason with salt rising bread, that plasmid, that toxin, DNA, it exits. Nobody really understands why.
Remember when I mentioned that Brown and Bardwell have gone so far as to visit bakeries abroad looking for the origin of salt rising bread? Well, they didn't find it. But they did find a couple of very similar yeastless breads. In Greece, there's a recipe that calls for chickpeas. In the Sudan, there's a recipe that uses lentils.
And we found that there are these scientific studies in Turkey and Greece and Sudan on these similar breads, and they've studied them extensively. They say have the same results. There's no pathogenic toxin to be found.
Brown explains that it turns out Clostridium perfringens and some other bacteria are ubiquitous. They're found all through nature, on the potatoes, in the flour, in the cornmeal. Somehow, Bardwell suspects a symbiotic relationship between all of these bacteria raise the bread and give it flavor and texture. But the fact that it doesn't make anyone sick is still kind of a mystery. Another mystery. By the by, Bardwell and Brown really want to find someone who is interested in researching the bread and the wild microbes. They say they're willing participants. Their quest to understand this bread continues, even as the tradition seems to be facing extinction. Brown says there are a couple of reasons it's fallen from fashion. She says the elder keepers of the oral tradition are dying, along with their way of life.
Salt rising bread requires that you're home all day. You literally cannot leave your house because you have to be so careful to watch each stage and be there when it's ready.
But for now, Bardwell and Brown, and at least a few others throughout Appalachia, are still nurturing the wild microbial bread.
One of the goals that we had when we started this bakery was we want to make salt rising bread and send it to the people who have not had it for years, but who pine for it and who really have cherished beautiful, loving memories of it. And we have accomplished that, and that feels wonderful.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Mount Morris. And I'll leave you with one of the stories that Brown and Bardwell have collected from their Salt Rising Bread customers.
I grew up in Spelter, West Virginia, just north of Clarksburg on Route 19, where the zinc factory used to be. My grandmother baked this bread every Saturday morning of her life. I don't think she ever bought bread. She would make several loaves and a couple of cookie sheets full of wonderful large buns. We lived next door, and she would call me over just before she took the bread out of the oven. I would race over and wait, usually impatiently, until the bread came out. Then I would take one of those buns and poke my finger into the middle and wiggle it around to hollow it out a bit. I would then put fresh, real butter and my daddy's homemade blackberry jelly down into that hot bread. It would melt, and I would sit and eat that bun with a glass of cold milk. I'm 50 years old, and my granny has been gone for nearly 40 years. If I close my eyes and let myself go back in time, I can still smell that wonderful aroma as the bread was baking and still feel my finger burning from sticking it into the bread. And I can almost taste that wonderful treat. It's one of my most cherished memories of my grandmother, who was my favorite person in the world.